to the Dharmalorian podcast from the Dermatology Education Foundation. The Dharmalorian podcast is an independent program made possible with support from UCB. The line between cosmetic and medical dermatology is not always clear. Whether patients ask for general skincare advice or seek treatment for the sequelae of medical conditions, dermatology care providers are increasingly called on to provide guidance or interventions for their patients. Speaking at Derm 2023 in Las Vegas, dermatologist Dr. Gilly Munavalli addressed medical aesthetic overlap.
Yeah, I think skin patients come to us all the time with issues on their skin, medical and cosmetic, and there's an overlap between the two. It's really the older we get, the more we accumulate pigment, dark pigment, red spots, wrinkles, and all those things as a result of the UV damage, the same UV damage that causes skin cancer. So it really is an overlap between, it's in our, we're trying to prevent patients from getting cancer. We talk about sunscreen all the time, how to use it, what to use. In the same vein, we're actually trying to help people promote their youthful skin. You know, so there's an overlap, and I think sometimes it's better to get patients' attention just by telling them they're going to look older than they really are. Then they kind of wake up and say, oh, really? So, but if you tell patients they're going to have a skin cancer 15 years down the road, that doesn't always resonate. So, if you're not, you know, a dermatologist or don't work in a dermatologist setting, you don't always appreciate, you know, the effect of UV light and a good knowledge of sunscreen, which ones are the best ones to use, what setting to use them in, how to reapply them, will go a long way in helping the patient. It sounds very cliche, but it's very true. I mean, I've had patients that have just been given that advice, and they've used sunscreen for years before they've seen me, and I can always tell.
Dr. Munavalli provided his view on minimally invasive procedures that could fit into virtually any dermatology practice. His fellow derm faculty member, dermatologist Dr. Sunil Chilakuri, also weighed in, with an emphasis on treatment of acne scars and other medical concerns.
And nowadays, you typically start with simple things like microdermabrasion, with the so-called hydrofacials, which are just a brand name. Chemical peels have been had a resurgence, even all strengths of chemical peels. Those are great maintenance things. For energy-based devices, we're usually talking about laser light sources early on. Intense pulse light is a great example. And nowadays, we're doing a lot of focused ultrasound and radiofrequency microneedling and non-ablative and ablative fractional resurfacing. I would say those are probably the biggest ones for treating patients that are starting to show some aging skin. So I think nowadays injectables have crossed all kinds of boundaries. So there are non-dermatologists doing a lot of injectables and non-physicians doing a lot of injectables. And that's just the way the market has become. And, you know, that wasn't always, that always made me totally happy, but it's, you know, people have a passion for doing it and they do it. My only thing is to do it well and do it safely. I think when you get into different energy-based devices and things that can really require nuance and technique and training, that's where we probably need to start thinking about referring to somebody like a cosmetic dermatologist who has experience with those things. The other thing is chemical peels. You know, as we get deeper and deeper with chemical peels, again, those are very, you know, nuanced things to do, and so those are all reasons to refer to a cosmetic dermatologist.
For minimally invasive treatments for acne scarring, 100% microneedling, just general microneedling. It's very, very inexpensive. It's something that's quite effective, and when you're looking at an overall investment cost as a dermatologist or as a dermatology practitioner, we know that it may range from $4,000 to $6,000, depending on what kind of deal that you got on the device. I always suggest getting an FDA-cleared device. So for me, I use SkinPen. It was the first FDA-cleared device. I know that the motor is powerful. I know that the needle manufacturer is very, very accurate, so you don't get drag. Sometimes you'll see little scratch marks after somebody got microneedling. I said, what device was used? Oh, I don't know. Let's call the med spa, let's call the practitioner and find out what was used, because usually it's not an FDA-cleared device. So there's lots that are out there, Collagen Pen that's out there, Strata has a pen. A lot of different ones that are not actually FDA cleared. So one is going to be the motor that we discussed, the strength of the motor. One is going to be the needles. The third one is going to be safety in terms of how do you protect the blood from getting splashed onto that device. So you really want to go with a manufacturer that's FDA cleared. But microneedling itself is remarkable. You can improve the overall skin health, you can improve those fine lines, and of course you can improve those acne scars.
Yeah, microneedling is really revolutionized, I think, what we can do in the office. There are microneedling rollers and very shallow, superficial ones that you can use at home. I would suggest, I don't mind that. I think for patients being very specific, up to say 0.2 millimeters or 0.1 millimeters, the rollers or stampers are good because they help you penetrate the expensive things you're buying, topicals, creams, and lotions, and serums, to penetrate better. They can also make them a little bit more irritating, so it's a double-edged sword. So in that respect, I would encourage that. But I think the more aggressive use of microneedling, deeper than that, where it can cause pinpoint bleeding, I'll probably leave that to the people, to the estheticians and physicians and non-physician providers to do.
What else should you learn? Chemical peels. So chemical peels do not have to be expensive. Forget about the brand names. Go back to McKesson, go back to Henry Schein, and you can order a bottle of a chemical peel anywhere from $50 to about $100, $120, and that treats multiple patients. So from a business standpoint, it's going to cost you anywhere from 25 cents to maybe $5, but what you can actually change in terms of that person's trajectory for their skin can be tremendous. And not just for acne, but actinic keratoses, for, like we said, even for rosacea, if you do a gentle peel, that's not going to peel, it's going to be a microscopic change, you're going to improve that skin health. So it's a neat opportunity with very, very low cost of entry.
We'll get back to the conversation about cosmetic interventions in just a moment, but first, here is this edition's Dermalorian clinical clip. In October, FDA approved yet another biologic for the treatment of psoriasis. Bimzelx from UCB is the first and only IL-17A and IL-17F inhibitor approved for the treatment of adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Speaking at Derm 2023, dermatologist Dr. Brad Glick spoke about the agent, which was then under FDA review.
There are actually a lot of agents that are either about to come, some that we've been waiting for quite some time, like bimekizumab, which is an interleukin-17AF, so it blunts that heterodimer of one of the IL-17 cytokines and that TH17 pathway downstream that's very important for our patients in terms of a treatment target for managing their skin and joint disease. I'm really excited, not just even for psoriasis where bimekizumab is concerned, but it has remarkable efficacy in psoriatic arthritis, and very likely, if fortunate for our patients, it will be approved in the distant future for treating our patients with hidradenitis suppurativa. So I know that gets a little bit of away from your ask about psoriatic disease, but nevertheless, these diseases, these inflammatory and these immune-mediated skin diseases, they're all intertwined. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about those agents that I referenced before, those topical therapies that really speak to new innovation. And then we do have some other biologic therapies and also systemic therapies like, in addition to deucravacitinib, which we received in this past year by approval from the FDA, there are some also another TYK2 inhibitor, which likely will come to market. And so that's unique. Sometimes there are nuances and there are differences in products in the same class. But by far and away, I will tell you that for psoriatic disease, we've got a really loaded toolbox right now. And that's really fortunate for our patients who have psoriasis.
The aesthetic toolbox is also well-stocked. Let's rejoin the discussion with Dr. Chilakuri.
And the nice part about microneedling, it works for so many different things. So it's not just acne and acne scars, but also works for keloidal scars. It works as a drug delivery system. If you're trying to get something in through thick psoriatic plaques, you can turn that device on, do a light microneedling. Now you can put your calcipotriene on top. You can put your mid-potency or high-potency steroid on top. So you can get results much, much faster. For stria, we can do stria on any part of the body. So this is not limited to a body location, and it's not limited to and skin type. You can treat all skin types 1 through 6. So it's a pretty versatile device. And I think if somebody's new starting off, I always say, and you want to do things that are going to be cosmetically inclined for your medical patients, always start with the microneedling device. Over-the-counter regimens, it's again, very, very inexpensive, things that you can get on Amazon. So Panoxyl is a fantastic brand name. It's very inexpensive. You can use a benzoyl peroxide wash. There's a 4% foaming wash that works great for almost every skin type without drying too much. There's a stronger version that's a 10% that's a wash, and there's also a 10% bar. So somebody who gets back knee or chest acne and things like that, I suggest the bar. It's easier for the surface area. Different is out there. So now Different is over the counter, and they made a version of Adapalene that's also through Panoxyl. I think it costs $15 to $18 on Amazon. So that's one tube will last you somewhere from 3 to 6 months. Pretty safe for all skin types. Even if you have more sensitive skin, it'll help with that. So those are two of the key things. The other thing is, can you find an acne patch? And there's different companies, again, and I keep going back to Panoxyl just because it's within our space, but those little patches you can put on, and that clears that acne typically within 48 to 72 hours. So pretty powerful type things that are out there. There's other things that you can buy over the counter. So there's one by called Clarity RX, and that's called, I always call it Zit Zapper, but it's ClearZit is what it's called, C-L-E-A-R and then Z-I-T. So that's a little thing that you can paint on. It has a combination of salicylic acid, some other ingredients inside there that will make that acne blemish go away within about 2 to 3 days. Lots of neat things that we have over the counter. The things that I caution patients for are not to use too many charcoal type products. Charcoal, when it actually gets activated and sits on the skin, especially as a peel or as a mask, it will dry out the skin more. And people say, well, I'm very oily in my T-zone, so I'm only going to put it there. The reason most people are oily in that area, there's breaks in the skin. So the body senses that, and it tries to upregulate the sebum production. So as a result, you're producing more oil, even though it's counteractive to what you're trying to gain. So the more you dry it out, the more you're producing, the more you have oil, the more you have acne. So I do caution people about, if you're going to do something that's more professional grade, so Skin Medica has a fantastic one, SkinCeuticals has a great one, Clarity RX has a great one, that you can use multiple times a week. And if you're doing one by, what's this company? Clarity RX. Oh, there's one by Underskin. So Underskin has a fantastic rice scrub that's safe to use once or twice a day, and that helps shed the skin, and it actually has a olive extract inside there that will also help with melasma. So lots of neat stuff that are over the counter that people don't have to necessarily come to your office, but you can teach your population about. So for skin, especially for rosacea or sensitive skin, you want to avoid anything that's going to be drying or irritating. So anything that's drying. So most times retinols are going to be extremely drying. You can use a retinol substitute, and that plant extract is called bakuchiol. So one of my favorite products is by a company called Isdin, ISDIN. They're out of Spain, and that product's called Melatonic. Melatonic has a vitamin C, typically it's considered an antioxidant. They use this vitamin C with a couple other peptides along with the bakuchiol ingredient inside there to improve the skin quality overnight. So even patients with rosacea, super sensitive skin, they can use something like that. You want to calm the skin, anything that's going to improve that skin barrier or replace that moisture that's there. And remember that most times creams or in lotions, they're going to last between 2 to 3 hours before they're evaporated. So you have to be remind your patients they have to reapply. So some over-the-counter things like we described, the Eucerin has a fantastic calming cream that's out there. Cetaphil and CeraVe, they're two of my favorite products that are out there. And with both of them, especially with the CeraVe product, they figured out that replacing the lipid barrier that's missing is quite active. So they have multiple product lines, one specifically made for those patients prone to rosacea. So I think those are nice products. And again, you can get them on Amazon. You can get them at Walgreens. You can get them at your local drugstore.
With the advent of JAK inhibitors for dermatologic indications has come a new skin condition, commonly termed JAKne. Dermatologist Dr. Adam Friedman offered his take on this condition at Derm 2023.
So the condition favorably called JAKne, which I'm not sure if it's true acne or not. I'm really trying to herald maybe a name change, papillopustular eruption of JAK inhibitors, kind of like we saw with EGFR inhibitors. Because if you think about their mechanism, EGFR receptors on the cell surface, just beneath that surface are your JAKs. And so probably that JAK inhibition is resulting in a similar cascade that we see with EGFR inhibitors, promoting apoptosis of keratinocytes, which then induces an inflammatory response. You get more foreign elements getting through the skin, increased sun sensitivity, giving what looks acneiform, but not true acne. In terms of incidence, with oral JAKs, it's certainly prevalent. Not every patient, but enough that I tell patients about it, and I tell them, you know, if you start getting this, this is some over-the-counter things you can do. This, while not true acne, I think does respond to acne therapies like benzoyl peroxide, like topical retinoids, like BPO and antibiotic combinations, and even oral doxycycline. And I like to use low dose for the anti-inflammatory effects, or even now narrow spectrum antibiotics like sarecycline. The one caveat is I have found a couple patients on systemic JAKs who get these kind of monomorphic papillopustules that when I scrape them for potassium hydroxide prep, I do find yeast, and I do treat them with fluconazole or topical ketoconazole. As you must know at this point, hopefully, that oral ketoconazole is a big no-no due to fulminant hepatitis. Please just say no. FDA has said so. So I think if you have the ability, do a KOH if you're seeing more kind of monomorphic papillopustules, or, you know, low-hanging fruit, just give maybe a ketoconazole foam that can be applied very readily to the head and neck areas, and that may add to your armament when treating this.
Sounds like an area to keep an eye on. That's it for this episode of the Dermalorian podcast from the Dermatology Education Foundation. This independent program is made possible with support from UCB. Listen to other episodes or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for joining us.